CliffCentral.com. Good morning, everybody. Yes. All right. Things are happening. Let's get cracking on this Friday morning. People to see, places to go, stuff to talk about, and we have a busy show planned for you today. Of course, a little bit later on, we will get to Ben Karpinski, who joins us. He's got lots of things to get off his chest today. We've also got a very special part of the show later on, where we'll be talking about the Qatar World Cup, because I just suddenly realized last night, well, yesterday morning, that the World Cup is happening this month, the 20th of December, November, somewhere around like the 20th, somewhere a couple of days away, like 2 weeks, maybe 2.5 weeks. And I'm like, shit, this is something I look forward to every year. This is, I have books on my shelf about like previous World Cups. I have memorabilia from previous World Cups. When it was here in South Africa, I went to like 9 games. For my sins, I'm an Argentina supporter and have been with my brother since we were like, I don't know, 12 and 9. So I love the World Cup, but I didn't even realize it was so soon. And I must be honest with you, I'm struggling to get excited. Now, it could have something to do with the fact that it's in Qatar and it's only happening in November instead of the usual time of the year, the European summer in July, because that's when we had it, even though we're in the Southern Hemisphere, and it was bloody cold, if you remember that properly. But we'll be talking to Stefano Vigoriti, who's done, you know, he even did the World Cup a couple of years ago with us live in our Cliff Central studios. We did our own live commentary. We'll speak to Kamom Bata, who is amazing. He was on KTV once. He used to be on 5FM with me for a while. He did sport on 5FM for me. He's also a presenter at Supersport, currently running a boutique recording studio, among other things. So we'll have him on. We'll also be joined by one of our listeners, a guy called Stefano Battaglia, who's sent us an email, and we'll speak to him as well. So a whole lot of people pitching in, along with Ben and I, on the Qatar World Cup, and lots to talk about there as well. Plus, George Meany a bit later on, too. And there is a stadium-shaped like a vagina, which we have to talk about later on, too. So we have a very busy agenda of stuff to get through today. Let us know what you're up to. You can get hold of us on the WhatsApp line if you would like to do that. It's very, very easy. You can drop us a WhatsApp on 071-783-6214. All right, so let me address the first thing from yesterday, because we had a couple of comments. In fact, Mapelo put this comment up. I don't know how, but Mapelo put this up at 6:49 yesterday afternoon, before the show was even live. Please come back to the studio for just the Friday show at least. Okay, so Mapelo, first of all, I thoroughly enjoyed yesterday in the studio again. It felt like a real show. I felt like we were doing things properly. We had, you know, a 3 or 4 camera set up. It was superb. You know, Michael and Ryan and Homo Lemo, they all put their and Simpiwe, because she, if without Simpiwe running the show live, nothing would happen. This wouldn't even happen. So the four of them worked really hard to make yesterday what it was. But you need a lot of people to do something that is that good. And I do believe we also had two tremendous guests. I mean, we had, Pumi and I were in the studio. Canton joined us later on. But we were, in the first hour, lucky enough to have Eugene Khoza pop in. And in the second hour, we had the mayor of Johannesburg. So for whatever reason you missed yesterday's show, you missed out. But it looked superb on YouTube. And yes, that is the standard to which we should aspire. And the short answer to a very long question is that you have a point, Mapelo. And so does Retabile, who sent me this email yesterday. Hey, GC, great show today. Are you back in the studio, or Vandag was just once off? And then one other email quickly from Brandon. Caught a bit of the show live while on YouTube this morning. The studio setup looks superb. I've gotten used to the YouTube podcast remote format, and as someone who works permanently from home at the moment, I can't think of anything worse than going back to a corporate office, which, granted, is a slightly different environment to a radio studio, but I have to say I was surprised at the setup. It really had a very professional look and feel to the show. Reminds me a little more of the talk formats we've seen from Rogan, Andrew Schultz, etc. Well done. Keep up the good work and put me down for an order on that tequila. That's from Brandon. Okay, so the answer is yes. We do have to get back into the studio. I hate the idea because I woke up yesterday at like 4:45 again. You know, it's a struggle. It's a bunch of shit you have to arrange in your life suddenly when you're going back to the office. And, you know, I had a bunch of other appointments yesterday. So obviously by the time I got back here at like 4 in the afternoon, I was pretty tired. But then that's what normal people do. That's what all of us have to do. That's what we used to do before COVID, and we had no excuse. People said you were lazy as shit if you didn't do a full day's work. So I get it. And, okay, we'll start off. We'll ease into it. The truth is, I am willing to do at least one show a week from the studio starting in January, and we will maybe make that two very shortly after that. But I think we've got a formula here that works, and we'll have to see exactly how we put it all together. But I think it's a distinct possibility that this is how things will happen. Remember, this show was never video. It was never on YouTube before COVID came along. We used to do like rare specials like with Tuli Madonsela or if there was a big international guest. Now we do all of our shows live on video and audio. It was always going to be a podcast show, but I suppose we can do both. And now that we know we can do both properly, we will. That's the short answer. I saw this, which I thought you needed to see this morning. If you're on YouTube, you need to watch this. It's two old people. Yeah, I love seeing happy people at whatever age, but this made me smile. So for a Friday morning, here's something to cheer you up. Okay? What you say? I just have to figure out, by the way, why when I show a video like that, which every other podcaster in the whole world can show, YouTube flags it and tells me we're breaking some copyright regulation. Because other people play clips of things. You can do this on Instagram or on TikTok, and nobody flags you. There used to be a time where they did that, by the way. Now, most of the stuff you can play on social media, and nobody gets like called up for copyright regulation. So I promise you, this video will be at least demonetized now. Not that I'm looking to make money out of YouTube. It's never really been an income source for us. But why is it that's flagged for copyright? Just because it's got that song in it. And if you didn't see it and you were listening on podcast, it's just two really old people. I mean, like, really old, just having a dance, obviously in their little lounge or their nursing home or wherever they are. But these two can dance. You can see they love each other. The woman starts laughing halfway through. I just love that. That I could only wish that all of us would get old and look that happy, because it looks fantastic. That's an old I could deal with. And you know, I'm not really looking forward to any old age myself. Kampamba says, is that Joe Biden? Nice Facebook jacket, G. Yeah, I bought this at Facebook headquarters in Palo Alto when I was in Silicon Valley. And so I wear it ironically from time to time because obviously, you know how I feel about Zuckerberg. But then people go, ooh, Facebook. And then, you know, they check you out like you might be one of the reptiles. Simon says, we are pack animals. My team is flourishing back. They have the option to work from home. Yeah, I think it's essential that we get back into the studio a little bit more, dip our toes back in it. Look, it's not that I'm afraid or that I was ever worried about COVID, and I'll get onto that in a second because we have beaten that horse to death. But it's more this is just so convenient. And this show has to be something that works for everybody. You know, it has to have, I need the show to grow. So we're going to be doing things that will grow the audience, that will make it more money, and that will fit more desirably into my life, because it's not going to be the only thing I'm going to be doing forever. I don't want to give it up at this point, but I want it to improve. I want all the parts of it to work in unison for a collective whole that works for everybody. And I think we can do that. Robert says that the audio quality is so much better in the studio. Yes, that is true too. And that is because it is a proper studio, soundproofed. It's got decent mics all around. You don't have any of the delays that you would with technical issues across the internet. So yes, I agree with you. All of that is true. So one last thing that I want to throw in here before we move on. I mentioned COVID just a second ago, because obviously some people have been back at the office for some time, but a lot of other people are still wondering, oh, like, what happened? How could this happen? I spoke about that amnesty that The Atlantic was quietly publishing the other day, hoping that we would notice it and go, yeah, sure, we forgive all that stuff, and we don't mind if, you know, kids were stopped from going to school, kids were masked at age 5, which is just the cruelest thing. We'll look back on this, and we will be horrified at what humans did to other humans during this time. All those old people who died in hospitals or on their own, they died of loneliness, of course, not of COVID. And the terrible things that we did, people prevented from seeing their own families, everything shut down, businesses destroyed. You know, the people going around are saying, oh, well, we didn't know. Well, Sweden knew. Here's the final word on this issue. And I promise you, I am not sick of telling everybody who was pro-lockdowns how wrong they were. You remember me having that argument on Reedy Tlabi's show with that petty socialist, where these people were saying, oh, no, we've got to do what the government says. Our health is the most important thing. They know what they're doing. The CDC, Dr. Fauci, lockdown, look at what the Chinese are doing. They're saving more lives. Well, here's the final bit of proof, the nail in their coffin. This was a tweet someone put out called Dr. Ellie David, who I have no doubt is someone of credibility, but he was probably part of that Barrington Declaration, the Great Barrington Declaration, which, of course, now everyone's on board with that. At the time, those doctors, including some of our South African doctors, were called the most terrible things: conspiracy theorists, crackpots, non-experts, all sorts of even more horrible pejorative terms than that. Dr. Ellie David says in his tweet, this is yesterday, excess mortality in Sweden versus Australia and New Zealand between 2020 and 2022, the ultimate proof that lockdowns killed more people than COVID. So what it is in this chart is Sweden, New Zealand, and Australia, obviously they compare the deaths, and then what they've done is looked at 2000, 2021, 2022, and then 22 to 23, which is where we're at the moment in terms of, you know, them doing the charts in advance. And you can see very clearly by the number of excess mortalities, excess deaths in all three of those countries, that by no stretch of your imagination or by any manipulation of the statistics can you make it look like Sweden performed worse than New Zealand or Australia. Australia and New Zealand did so much worse in every way. While Sweden took the brunt of their excess deaths in the first year because they didn't lock down and they didn't shut everything, they had a spike in the beginning. And remember, all of the lockdown people were saying, oh, that's proof. Sweden's just as bad. Doesn't matter whether you lock down or don't. So the final word on this is this chart. And I advise you to look it up and to show everybody, because those deaths in green and red and black, those are deaths that didn't need to happen. Those are deaths that happened because of lockdowns. Okay? And that is essentially what people were arguing, people who knew what they were talking about. And don't say, oh, well, we were in the dark. We were making it up as we went. No, we weren't. There were precedents for this. We know how colds and flu worked before that. We know how viruses have worked for thousands of years. Here we are. We've got plenty of information. This is the capstone on this pyramid. Let's put it away now, and let's make sure that the people who made these terrible decisions are held accountable. That's what we want. Speaking of accountability, I am loving, and I'm absolutely blown away by what Elon Musk is doing at the moment. Not because he's some genius and he's fixing Twitter. I think Twitter's still got major, major problems. But he's having so much fun that anyone who's watching him, even if you've never heard of Elon Musk in your life and you've never seen anything from him before, if you just watched him as a troll and as a person who's having a good time on social media, this is the most entertaining thing in the whole world right now. So we'll go into some of that a little bit later on. Talk about Elon and his tweets with some very famous people. Stephen King is having a shit fit about this verification for $8. I thought Stephen King had made tons and tons of money out of all of his horror books and all the movies that have been made from them. But clearly he's really cheap because he won't pay the $8 to keep his verification. So already there are two things that I think Elon has put into progress and into the system at the moment. He's the only director of Twitter. He's fired the whole board. The one is to establish some kind of thing where everybody can be verified if you just pay. Someone pointed out that the most interesting thing about that is that the people who are angry are not angry that $8 is too much. They're angry that $8 is too little, because some of these people are more about trying to keep other people out than about trying to make themselves important or verified. And that, I think that's a good point. The other thing he's doing is that he, I believe, is going to limit the number of tweets you can post in, 10 minutes. Because that's how these bots have ruined the algorithm and how they've made it seem that certain issues are more important than they are. And you've seen companies that have paid or have set up a bunch of fake accounts in order to get themselves trending. You get trending topics. This is why I've always said a trending topic is not a real thing. It shouldn't be something that anyone aspires to. You've got whole marketing departments at big companies that are focused on getting themselves trending for some bullshit, like a logo change or whatever. And we've always wondered how that works. Well, now we know that it's bots who can, bots can tweet like 1,000 times in a minute. And if they limit that to, let's say, you can only tweet 10 times in a minute, then suddenly it doesn't matter what those bots do, because a human can actually do as much. That's interesting. And I hope that it results in Twitter just being a little bit more believable and more real and populated by more humans than by robots. This is fantastic. It's a map. It's a map of Europe, and it says which country has the least attractive people according to Europe. So it's pretty much all orange, because everyone in Europe, from Portugal, Spain, France, Holland, Belgium, Germany, Italy, Croatia, Slovakia, Slovenia, Poland, Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia, Sweden, Norway, Finland, Denmark, Ireland, Romania, Bulgaria, and even Belarus, all of those countries say that, sorry, that was the Ukraine, not Belarus. The Ukraine, all of those countries say England has the least attractive people. Isn't that brilliant? So the English, according to all of Europe, with a few exceptions, has the least attractive people. I think that's pretty funny. The Turkish think they're the ugliest people, which is a whole different story. That's something to definitely think about and talk about. And the English think the Belgians are the ugliest. But I think that's quite telling, that everyone in Europe, with the exception really of, who is it, I think we've got Montenegro, Greece, Turkey, and England themselves. With those exceptions, everyone believes England's the ugliest country by population, which is bloody funny. So let us know what you're up to this morning and what you've got planned for the weekend, because we are solidly into November now, and that means for a lot of people that's the holidays, you know. December is just about to begin. People are finishing up matric exams shortly. There's going to be a lot of really good, exciting summer stuff happening. Let us know what you're up to and if you've got your plans all sorted already. Jenny says it's the English and their teeth. It's a dead giveaway. Yeah, that is funny. And Sanella, going back to Twitter, says that they're angry because they want to feel special. Verification makes them feel like celebrities. Who cares about some blue badge? The tweet still looks the same as the rest. Well, yeah, you are right. You're not wrong at all. There are a lot of people who really put a huge amount of value or attach to their own personalities and identities a huge amount of value because of that little blue check mark. And maybe it would be a good thing to just get rid of it. The idea originally, correct me if I'm wrong, because you know, a lot of people who listen to the show know more than I do, correct me if I'm wrong, but the original idea of the verification was that you are who you say you are. You know, I remember I've got a verified Twitter account, and it's only because at some point when I'd gone over a million followers, Twitter actually sent me an email or a direct message and said, we need you to verify that it is you. Please send us your ID or passport or proof of residence or some sort of indication that it is actually you who owns this account. So maybe that's still a good idea, just so we know that we're dealing with the real people. But if you think it's dumb, like I do, that people are just using it because they think it makes them feel famous and special, then we can get rid of it, right? So we'll look at that. The other thing, while we're talking about Musk, is Tesla have got a Chinese rival. Apparently, it's the most literal interpretation of the flying car that we've seen yet. Now, I get very nervous when I hear about anything made in China, and you could call me all kinds of things because of that. You might say that's a terrible preconceived notion. You know, you're being stereotypical. Some people would even say you're saying be a bit racist about this. But the fact is, a lot of the stuff that comes out of China is horrible and rubbish. And they have a reputation which they've earned. I didn't give it to them for being quite crap about things. But XPeng, or however you pronounce that, XPeng is a Chinese electric vehicle which is going to compete with Tesla. They have unveiled their first flying car prototype. It is a car with four rotors on it, like a drone, enabling it to switch between driving and flying. A video of the vehicle's maiden voyage shows it roll out on a garage and take off. This is pretty wild. So it looks like halfway between a drone and a car. Let me just show you what the thing looks like. I'll show you a picture of it if you're on YouTube. Again, this is why you need to like and subscribe and follow us on YouTube. So get onto that ASAP, because I'm not going to beg you more or ask you twice. So this is what it looks like, the XPeng. All right, this is according to Business Insider. Now, that looks ridiculous. First of all, if you park two of these next to each other, you're actually taking up six parkings if you park just two of these cars next to each other. So I don't know how it's going to work. It appears to me that those rotors don't fold in, so they're permanently a part of the car. So also, when you're traveling in traffic, if a truck came alongside you, you'd have major problems because it would smash off two of your rotors. Shorter cars would be able to go under them, but taller cars, which it looks like most cars would be taller than this, would just get in the way. You'd have to take up three lanes on the road. Some roads, you obviously don't have that space. There are some roads you could barely get a normal car down. So I don't know how that's going to work, but it's worth exploring. I mean, I've been very bullish on flying cars for a long time, so I'm not going to write this off and say, oh, well, it's just bullshit. And good for the Chinese for at least trying this. It hovers a bit in the clip. It flies forward, spins in place, and then returns back to the launch pad. Most flying car ideas, they say, from startups are heavy on the flying, light on the car. They're personal aircraft that don't have wheels. But the X3 looks more like a road-going car that happens to be a giant drone when you look at the roof and what's attached to it. Designed for both air flight and road driving, the flying car conveniently features sleek rotor fold-away systems. Okay, so it can fold away, but you're still going to need a lot of space above. In other words, you can't fold it up inside the garage. It'll probably break the roof. So I'm not sure how this is going to work. I want to see more. I want to look at what it looks like when it's all folded away. And let's see which flying car eventually wins. I love the idea of flying cars. I've spoken about this before. Makes me very happy. But we got to find one that doesn't look stupid and it doesn't take up more space than it should. And so far, I'm a bit iffy on these things. Paintballs to be shot at Dutch wolves in a bid to make them less tame. Okay, so the Dutch have this problem. The Hollanders, they've got this problem where wolves are getting a little bit too tame and they're moving into towns and they're becoming a pest. So what they're going to do is they're going to shoot paintballs at them. There are fears that wolves are becoming so unafraid of humans that they are a serious danger. The decision by the provincial government in Arnhem comes after a video posted on social media shows a wolf strolling past a family in a national park. Paintballs have been chosen so that the rangers can see which have been hit. It is hoped that this will encourage the wolves to stay 30 meters away or more from people. A spokesperson from the province told Dutch News that one of the wolves in particular appeared to be looking for people. Environmental organization Fauna Bescherming, that's okay, I can understand it. Fauna Bescherming is in Afrikaans would be protection, has accused park officials of feeding the wolves because if they come up to people or they become too tame, they can be classed as problem animals and then will be culled. According to a recent report, there are 20 adult wolves living in the country. Only 20? And they're worried about this? 20? Seems ridiculous. This is, you know, to have Holland's problems. If only 20 adult wolves. The announcement from the local government does not mean that anyone with a paintball gun can head to the park and start shooting at the wolves. No, because you know people will, right? No date has been set for when the measure will start, and it will be carried out by people who are authorized. You know, this is Europe. They have a regulation. Only the authorized people will be allowed to shoot the wolves. That's what they're saying. So very, very important. All right. Ben will be joining us shortly. We'll be talking about a bunch of things, including these Elon Musk tweets. I've got a couple of those we'll look at. It's really, really funny. Some of the comments. Nico says, remember where dogs come from? Of course it would have happened. And we allowed them to become that tame. I look at so many dogs, Nico, and I can't believe that they come from wolves. I mean, I look at this puppy of mine is now 10 months old, and she bears no resemblance to a wolf at all. My sister's little corgi, yes, I can see a bit of wolf going on there. Obviously, you know, Alsatians, German Shepherds, you can see a bit of wolf going on there too. Malamutes, definitely, Huskies. But a toy pom, a Maltese poodle, I mean, I almost wonder what a wolf would think, you know, if it encountered one of these things. It would just see food. My Jack Russell says Corona's boring is 90% wolf in his mind. That's about right. Oh, yes, a good point being raised by Sanella here. We'll ask George Meany what he thinks of that Chinese car a bit later on. Definitely. All right, some other things. Red Robin says, I'm so ugly, I scared the crap out of the toilet. Da-dum. In fact, hang on. Here we go. Flying cars already exist. They're called helicopters. Yeah. And look how much space they take, and you need a pilot's license. And look, you will need to obviously license flying cars as well. There's no way you just fly these things. We'll need lanes. I mean, imagine if everybody had a flying car and the sky became as crowded as the streets. It's a possibility. Ah, here is Ben. Good morning, Ben. Can't hear you. Hang on. It's my fault. Go ahead.
What? Oh, hi. Hi, Gareth. Happy Friday. I'll do that again.
Happy Friday. How are you doing?
Yeah.
Good.
Very good, thanks. Very good. Very fresh. Happy for a Friday.
Yeah. I love the fact that there was a little bit of rain by the looks of things last night. Love waking up in the rain, and I love waking up to that smell of rain. And I'm excited about the weekend. I'm excited about all these weekends going down to Christmas and New Year. And the World Cup, which we'll talk about a little bit later on, because I didn't even realize it's like this month. I mean, I knew it was somewhere this year, and I knew they'd moved it because of Qatar. But we'll be talking about that later on.
Exactly. The World Cup in Qatar.
Well, you know how much I love the World Cup. So, again, let's put a pause on that until later, because I can feel myself getting a little bit excited now that I'm aware of it. But up to now, not a peep. Nothing. Zero. Ben, your input on the Bucks team and the prediction for tomorrow. I'm sorry to put you back in the role of sports guy, but Nico wants to know.
Nico, we're playing against the second best team in the world this weekend and the first best, or the best team in the world next week. I think it is a challenge that if we win these games, I'm going to be so incredibly impressed and slightly surprised. There's something about Northern Hemisphere this time of year, and these teams have got so much better. My heart and my head both say we're going to lose against Ireland, but actually win against France. That would be my prediction. And as for the team, the fly-off issue, you know, it's about having a proven match winner when you're playing tight technical games. Damien Willemse is a superstar. I see that there's a lot of pressure on him. You know, he's not meant to be a fly-off. I think he's an incredible inside center / fullback. Sorry, Nick. It's too early in the day for me to really.
That's pretty good. It's better than anything I could venture. So good stuff. Oh, listen, congratulations! I saw you and Sharman got some awards last night.
Well, we won a Penn Doolin, Gareth, and it was quite a big full circle moment for me in my life. Really, the last time I was at the UJ Theatre, I think it's the UJ Theatre. I think it's the official name. Was like 14 years ago, and I was on the stage with my cock wrapped around my wrist doing a wristwatch for the show Puppetry of the Penis with these two naked Australians. And last night there I was, fully clothed in a jacket, looking smart,
getting an award
for a documentary. Talk about full circle, huh?
So what's the documentary? I mean, this is cool. Well done.
So that was my Pimpy documentary that we put our heart and soul into. And, yeah, I mean, obviously with the award seasons, how they roll around as they go in a cycle. And the Penn Doolins is probably the last one that we've entered that one into. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it was a really cool moment, you know. That's what I love about living in a place like Joburg. You know, you've got memories and there's certain things. And to think 14 years ago I was a very different person to the person I am now, and it made me laugh.
I have to say, I never thought I'd say this, but seeing these awards shows and these dinners and these events and year-end functions again makes me happy. There was a time where I was very jaded about these. Yeah, I went to too many of them. I was obviously emceeing a few of them. I was invited to some of them. And it got to be very boring. But I've realized now how important these things are. For people to get out, for people to be acknowledged, for people to receive adulation and credit for good work, it's really important. And if not for for the reputation of your business and for your clients to get the recognition that they deserve. You know, there is a place for this stuff. And for a couple of years now, it's been on pause. And you imagine being in the events industry, how that's just gone down the toilet. And now suddenly you're seeing these green shoots. And, you know, I've been to three dinners, awards shows in the last 3 weeks, which is terrific. And I can't say how good it is to see people face to face again, see them interacting normally, see them partying afterwards and having drinks together and celebrating each other. It's really, really important. Humans need to do this.
We really do, and you're right. And there's a whole thing about recognition, because all our jobs, now that we're remote workers, or we were remote workers during COVID, everything felt a bit meaningless, you know. And as much as I've never been the biggest fan of awards, because I feel a lot of them are quite contrived, last night at the Pendulums, I had a very different kind of view on this, because this is an award ceremony that, celebrates like mother tongues, you know, like native language in this country. And the actual show itself, because of that, was so damn interesting, because you are ranging from all the different sort of language that people use and communicate with and trade in, I guess, in this country. And the awards were totally across that. So it wasn't just about having a big budget and a big brand to work on with something fancy and like CGI and all this kind of stuff.
Right.
You know, it's about connecting with communities and really using creativity in the way I think it should be used. And, you know, it keeps going back to like when people say like, you know, what do you think of Australia? And I keep saying, it's like, it's great, but you're going to meet the same person over and over and over. Whereas last night just kind of reminded me that this place is just so damn interesting. Like, there's no two people alike, you know. No. I'm not going to meet the version of me there. No. I met about 73 different other sort of people that maybe I hadn't seen before. And that's cool. That's what's just really so cool about this place.
I love it. I love it. I was on the show yesterday. We were in studio again for the first time in 2 years, the whole nice crew, which was very, very nice. And Canton said to the mayor of Joburg, you better fix this place because I'm not moving, which I thought was like, you know, instead of us giving up and deciding, oh, well, and a lot of people have decided to do this. We've discussed it ad infinitum on the show. I'm going to move to wherever. Why don't we just say to these people who are in charge and up to now have fucked up so badly, fix it, because we're not leaving. We'll chase you away if you don't fix it. That's what we should be doing. You know,
it's such a good point. And I went to another really interesting event on Monday at the Joburg Startup Club. And there was a guy, one of the best speeches I've heard in quite some time. It wasn't really a speech. It was just like an open sort of interview, like a panel discussion.
Yeah.
A guy called Mitch Adams, he started Ozo and a couple of other things around that sort of space.
Yeah.
And his viewpoint is, what am I going to do? I've got enough money, okay, so I can go somewhere and just plug into some other place. But then what? Cool, yeah. I'm safer. But, you know, he said, like, what if all South Africans kind of had a different sort of mindset? Like, what if we made a business out of fixing all the shit here? So ultimately, that's what government should do, right? They should do the stuff that they're meant to do. But we know they're absolutely useless pieces of shit. So his whole mindset is, I want to fix South Africa and I'll make business out of it. So he has this amazing SME entrepreneurship sort of platform, because that is his way of giving back and fixing problems.
Sure.
You know, we've spoken about this so many times. Like, I get immigration because a lot of people just want to plug into a first world and exist until they no longer breathe, which is cool. That's how some people like to live. But if you have the means, the desire, and a little bit of, you know, personality, a bit of pride in where you are, that's a much better mindset.
You know,
like, what if we just look at this, like, just like you said, what if we reframe this? Like, what if we stay? Then what? What can we do?
Well,
and the potential is huge.
Well, I know also, I mean, you were talking about your Mpimpi documentary, which I think is terrific. But there are so many other stories that need telling. So many.
And
we've got great, real stories that we don't have to make shit up. We don't have to have Wakanda. If you actually know the history of the Zulu Kingdom, Wakanda's boring. And
so boring.
Fictional.
It's so boring. It's
and
so stupid. It's so contrived.
Like, if you actually go into, yesterday I was sitting talking to Muzi Kuzwayo, who I love spending 5 minutes with. If I have 5 minutes, if he has 5 minutes. I mean, it's just, this guy is just fantastic, right? And he was telling me about a friend of theirs who has written this book about Zulu history, and she knows just everything. She spent years studying it. She's at the University of KwaZulu-Natal, and he's trying to get me a copy of this book because he said there's some things that people just don't know because no one's really paying attention to it. He says, if you told these stories, Hollywood would snap them up like that. And it got me thinking, like, there's enormous potential. Forget about solving the problems like you just pointed out now already. I mean, that's obviously a way to make money and to improve the place. You can do you can do good things, and you can make yourself wealthy. Because
there has to be an incentive. We're not all just doing it for the goodness of our own hearts.
Right. Nobody on earth is perfectly altruistic. No one. And that, funnily enough, that also came up with the mayor of Joburg yesterday, Mpopalatse. But it's interesting to me that, you know, the people who win, they've decided in advance that they are positive, optimistic, and they're looking for opportunities. The people who lose have decided in advance that they're going to lose. That's just how it works. It starts right there.
They've also decided in advance that it's all to chance, you know. Mm. Oh, I don't know, I'm not lucky, or it's not meant to be. No, fuck that. You can do it. You can change it. But, you know, as you talk about the whole story thing, you know, I think a lot of South Africans just don't have a lot of pride in what they do. And you look at sort of crime. Yes, there's various aspects to crime. It's a very nuanced debate. But if you have pride in your country, in yourself, all these kind of things, like, you won't litter, you won't steal, you won't murder, you won't rape. Some people are fucking horrible and they will do that. I get that. But if you were to instill pride in every single person here, I reckon it'll bring crime down hugely. Well, and what makes pride swell? It's like really good stories. You know, like you just said with the whole Zulu story. What if you knew more about that and you weren't just outsourcing to Marvel to tell you some stupid story and then that's like going to be your thing to go to?
Yeah. Well, it would require people to read, which...
There's the kicker, Gareth. There's the kicker.
If we make movies, and you know what? One of the comments here is quite right. They're going to make a new Shaka series, which is going to come out soon. You have to see the trailer, says Kapamba. Yeah, I will. I love Zulu history, so I'm big into this. But what I discussed with Muzi yesterday is that next year, he and I are going to do a road trip for a week through KZN, and he's going to take me on a tour with this historian that he knows, and I'm going to see all the stuff for myself, and we'll document it and turn it into something, which will be really cool. So maybe that'll add value as well. But yeah, you're right. I mean, like, we have to start believing in ourselves. And I think a big problem in America right now is that they don't believe in themselves. But
such a good point. Yeah.
I will say, just because it's something that I know you found as entertaining as I have, Elon Musk is having more fun than anyone else right now. This is just, if you ever wanted to see a CEO just loving what he does, and obviously he's just fucking around at the moment. He has real business plans. He's already introduced this idea of people having to pay for verification, which I want to hear your opinion of. And that'll bring in like millions and millions of dollars in revenue, which doesn't require advertisers. And we all know you're in the same business as I am. Advertising money, sponsorship money is hard to work, to find, to keep, to grow. It's a losing battle if you're not the monsters in the room like Facebook or you know, Google or Amazon. So there's got to be other ways to generate income. And he's already coming up with those. And Twitter's been sitting on its hands for all the time it's been in existence. So that's good.
Brilliant.
But what's the funniest stuff you've seen?
Well, he's been like this from the start. It's not like suddenly he's employed, you know, Ryan Reynolds to be funny. Like, Elon's got a good mind on him. Like, I'm not one of those Elon fanboys, because when you really sort of break it down, he's also like very attached to this new world order kind of vibe, you know, like the microchip in the brain.
And he's
electric
cars. He's got terrible, terrible taste in women. Terrible.
Far too many. I mean, like, I love the fact that he is just doing what he believes he wants to do. And I think that's also just a really, really cool thing. And the thing that he's doing with Twitter is that Twitter is a platform just like anything else, right? So YouTube monetizes things. You get YouTube Premium, which I think is a really cool service because you don't get ads. As a creator, there's major benefits. So all he's doing is going along the similar kind of model, because Twitter is like, if you think of it like a city, it's pretty much like Joburg, really. No one invests in it. People just throw shit. It's got so much potential, but no one's willing to give back. Everybody is entitled. Everyone sits back and expects someone else to do it. What he's saying is like, okay, cool. So the verification thing, it means something. It's a status thing. There'll be a couple of other benefits too. So there'll be a paid service. So if you want that, celebrities, you're not going to get it for free. And everyone who's a creator can do the same. $8, great. I'm a massive believer in, if you do something good in life, you know, like, I subscribe to a fitness platform. I don't need any of the information, but I like the guy's podcast. So I pay him $9 a month because I like what he does, and I really support people who do these kind of things. So Elon wants $8. I mean, I'd pay $8 just to kind of follow him every month. And the way that he has cracks at people who are entitled, stupid, and just so full of themselves. So it's nothing more than the service, really. People got to understand that everything costs in life. Like, look at this tweet, okay? That's just...
So Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who's a congresswoman from New York, says, LMAO, laugh my ass off at a billionaire earnestly trying to sell people on the idea that free speech is actually $8 per month subscription plan. With her blue check mark there, I see, firmly placed next to her name. And Elon Musk replies, your feedback is appreciated. Now pay $8. You know?
That's amazing. I mean, this chick is such a waste of time. She's such a fucking horrible, hypocrite, socialist person. Like, this whole thing about firstly, she demonizes, like, the word billionaire, like a derogatory kind of term, and then she puts free speech again. Fuck, these people are the worst. And Elon is, like, the antithesis of this, which is really good. And Twitter should be about this.
I mean, this is probably the first time in history that non-aristocrats, in other words, people who just didn't inherit piles and piles of money from whoever came before them, can do anything they want or do nothing and still live. Like, there are professional nothing-doers in the world. They're actually, they're even in a country like South Africa, which is, we're not a rich country. I know people who are wholly dependent in their 30s on their parents.
Wow.
Now, those people are the luckiest people who've ever lived in human history. They're obviously a waste of time and space, too, and you wouldn't want to spend more than 5 minutes with them because they're entitled shits who have nothing to contribute. That's why they can't do anything. No one's going to ever pay them to do anything because they're useless. But it's a phenomenon. It is an absolute mindfuck that there are people who can sit around doing nothing all the way into their 30s. In a country like this,
yeah,
you know,
that's quite
funny. And what he's talking about there, where he's like, you've got to pay for this. This is not for free. See, if you get something for nothing, if I give you an iPhone, you may think, oh, that's great. You'll feel good about having something for free for a couple of minutes. You may even have for a few days. You'll be grateful. You know, you send me a WhatsApp and say, thanks very much on your new phone for my new phone. But you don't value it deep down inside because you haven't worked for it. This is something we've forgotten as human beings, and it's something worth reflecting on just for a minute, is there was a time where in order to have something, you needed to work for it, even for your food. In order to eat vegetables, you had to first grow those vegetables. There were no fruits just hanging off of trees and, you know, wild animals just walking into your enclosure and lying down so that you could cut them up and eat them. Everything you did required work and sacrifice. And so you had pride in it, but you valued the work itself. Now you've got people going, I don't want to do that. It feels like hard work. I would rather just sit at home and let someone deliver it to me. You know,
yeah.
I mean, this is why we don't appreciate anything anymore. And this is why so many people are wandering around the world going, work is a burden. Why do I have to work? I want to just travel and have fun and party and drink and be with my friends and all that, which is fine. But those are the rewards for a hard day's work. You don't get to have fun if you haven't done a hard day's work. And somehow we've decided, only in this generation, maybe two generations, three generations that are alive at the moment, certainly not, you know, my grandparents' generation, they didn't know what this was, that we've decided work is a burden, it's unfair, we should be able to spend our time doing arts and crafts. This is a novel idea, and it's I don't think it's good for us, actually.
No, it's really not. And I think that's why the filthy socialists need to be called out at every single stage, because they're the ones that are deluding the youth with all these kind of like skewed ideas about what economics is. And the only reason they got there because someone worked hard to give them a life that's easy.
Right.
And it's a perpetual cycle that it's just, you've got to learn two things in the world. Who pays for things in the world? And how it all came to be. So learn history, learn economics, but really understand them. You know, we spoke about the whole Shaka Zulu story. That story will horrify people at what an absolute giant fucking bastard that guy was.
Yeah,
he was he was an absolute demon. Like, he was so horrible. But in the context of where everything came from, he had an important role to play. And you understand his life. You understand where we've come from as people, how we've got better, how we've engaged, how we've interacted. We've got, like, history. I mean, yeah, there's no point telling you this because you agree with me, but history is not emphasized enough.
Well,
but also teach about economics too.
It's the only subject you do at school that teaches you about people, and most people don't do history. So they never learn about people. And then they're shocked and horrified when they enter the workplace and their boss says, I need you to work. They're like, oh, I thought I was just coming here to clock in. I don't know if you ever saw, because we're talking about Elon Musk, I don't know if you ever saw that video. It was doing the rounds maybe 6 months ago of this girl who worked at Twitter and what she did during the day at Twitter. Did you see what this was? This is before Elon. Okay, so I'm going to try and find it and send it to you, but I can't find it now while we're doing the show. This girl walks in to the office at like 9 o'clock in the morning. The first thing she does is she goes to this amazing canteen, which looks like a 5-star restaurant, right? Because if you've ever been to Silicon Valley and you see, like, this is where I bought this top, you see the kind of environment that has been created for these precious employees there. Obviously, the reason it's so competitive, the reason they've made it such a wonderful place to work, and they've turned it into like a, I don't know, a millennial's wet dream, is because these coders and these engineers and these really, really qualified people who can do all the software engineering and the building behind the scenes that makes all these platforms work, they are hard to come by. The best ones cost a fortune, right? And and up to now, there have been less of them than there have been jobs available. In other words, the demand for them was very high. So they had to build these like beanbag offices with like climbing walls and sleeping pods and meditation rooms and yoga classes at 9:30 and paddle in the afternoons and, you know, all these things that they could do just to attract these really talented people and these very well-qualified people that they needed to have. Of course, all of that has changed now. But this girl went into this office. I kid you not, she takes you on like a, it must be about a 5-minute tour with like cheesy music playing in the background. This place looked to me more like a summer camp for a 13-year-old than an office where people do work. There were desks, but they were completely bare because people would you know, they bring their laptop and sit down wherever. There was no idea that there was actually productivity happening there. There was nothing being produced. And I think this is part of the problem for a lot of these social media companies, is that they weren't producing a product. We were the product, right? Now that they're going to charge $8, it becomes a product again. They've got to give you $8 worth of value in return. So there's going to be a different change. There's going to be a cultural change inside these companies, which is interesting. And I think we're lucky to be able to watch this happen in real time now, because they're going to have to derive value out of Twitter, not just for shareholders, but for users. And we've all seen the value so far in like getting news or being connected to the world. And we know what the positives of Twitter are, but we know that these huge negatives, which have chased a lot of people like me right off the platform. So now maybe because there's someone with a business brain in charge there, and there will be other people brought in. This is what I'm excited about, by the way. Elon can't do everything. He's one man. He's got a bunch of companies to run. But he'll hire people now who will have a completely different way of working. They're not going to be these millennials who arrive at the office, and I know there are good millennials, don't get me wrong, but there are a lot of them who are just layabouts. He's not going to hire people who will need to go to the sleeping pod 3 times a day and, you know, will want a toasted sandwich with truffles on it. Instead, they're going to be people at those desks actually figuring out how to make Twitter a better experience for everyone, not just for political activists and blue check mark people and journalists. And I think that's quite exciting. I mean, this video is frightening because anyone in South Africa who has a job, whatever your job is, and there are easier jobs and there are harder jobs, but I promise you watching this video will drive you mad because you'll think this person's earning probably way more than any of us, right? And she's doing nothing. I can tell you during the course of that video, there is not even any evidence, not even the slightest shred of evidence that this person can do anything that is useful to the rest of humanity. So you ask yourself by the end of it, and she put this out. She's proud of it. She's like, look at my job. I do nothing all day, and I get paid to eat, sleep, be with my friends, do fitness classes and yoga and stuff in office hours. And then people in South Africa are waking up at 4 a.m. to squeeze in gym, to drop the kids at school, to get to the office in time so they don't get shat on, to go through meetings, to do hard work, sometimes hard labor. You know, you can imagine. People watch that and they go, what? This is a person who calls that work? It's crazy.
But it's not sustainable, I guess. This is the thing, you know. So people think that's, this is the world we live in now. But ultimately, someone's got to pay the rent. Someone's got to step up to something. And this is why capitalism always wins, right? Because it's this natural order.
Mm.
This is what has to. It's always going to be the case. I would love to see this video, though, because it's nice to look at fairy tale people from time to time.
Dogoza says, sleeping pods are amazing. I'm one of those millennials and worked for a company in Cape Town that had some sleeping pods. Naps are amazing for productivity. Sure. Listen, there's a balance. I'm not saying that we must throw all of that out. And George says that his office at Auto Trader, they offer many of those things, but people are held accountable for their value and output, not their time. This culminates in people hardly using it. Right. But it's nice that it's there. And there hasn't been one of us who hasn't at some point at the office thought, oh, if I could just have a 20-minute nap, I would be so much more productive after this. So I'm not saying we must throw the baby out with the bathwater, but
I'm going to do it today. I'm going to have a nap. I went to bed very late last night, just about 2 hours sleep. I'm going to have a nap on my big pink couch.
Good. And then Carl has some useful advice for me here. He says, Gareth, you've been in broadcasting for a long time now. It's time you learned the difference between less and fewer. Please, my boy. All right. You know what, Carl? There's some things I'm not – I'm old dog, new tricks – probably not going to happen, but I'll try.
Less out of you, Carl. Okay. Any fewer people like you? Like...
Is it fewer people that like you? Is that correct?
Like, I don't know. I'm mostly illiterate. I'm on this show mostly to learn things.
Okay. All right. Brilliant. Ben is with us. We've got to talk about the Qatar World Cup. We want to hear from you. Let us know what you're up to on the WhatsApp line as well. You can do that immediately. You can also get us on the comments on YouTube. Like and subscribe, blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. We'll see you in a minute. Don't go anywhere. CliffCentral.com.